You all know my guest today. He is quite a character. He's an outspoken Republican strategist, a leading conservative critic of Donald Trump, and the co-founder of the Lincoln Project. Rick Wilson joins me on the Michael Steele podcast as we just do a little dance on the grave, political grave of Ron DeSantis. Why not? Because he's killing himself, so we'll bring flowers. So stick around and enjoy a conversation on that, the 2024 election, Mitch McConnell, and a whole lot more right here coming up on the Michael Steele podcast. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. Look, this guy's a brother from another mother, as far as I'm concerned. He and I are so simpatico. We have been throughout the time we've known each other. Rick Wilson is just
a damn long time now, Michael.
Damn long time. Damn good long time. And we've had some fun along the way, but
absolutely.
Our role and our goal now is to stop the crazy, suppress the stupid, and keep the democracy on track. That's
just the little things.
It is not complicated for us, folks. Seems to be for a lot of other people out there, though, Rick. I have to tell you, man, I've been watching a lot of these so supposed candidates who are running for various offices, like, I don't know, president of the United States. And I'm just struck by how lame they all are. So let's start with the lamest of the lame, and that would be the Ron DeSantis campaign. I don't get what people don't get about this campaign at this point.
he spent the weekend dug in on defending the proposition that there were good parts about slavery. Now, call me crazy, Michael, and this seems like a 101 kind of move to me.
Kind of.
Maybe that's not something you want to invest a lot of your political capital in defending.
No!
Call me nuts, but it seemed like once he had Tim Scott and John James and Byron Donalds and people who were on very much on his side of the ideological fence going, hey, bro, you want to back off on that one? That's enough. He would have said, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong about this.
Hey, Rick, maybe black people, regardless of whether they're Republican or Democrat, would know better if they benefited from slavery.
I don't know. You know, if you're Ron DeSantis, you don't think anybody's smarter than you. But it's like someone said, hey, you know, there are bad campaigns out there. And Ron DeSantis said, hold my beer.
Yeah,
because he keeps digging the hole deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And every day that goes by, you're like, the fuck is wrong with this guy? And at this point, you know, let's remember where he started out. About a year ago, Ron DeSantis, there was a survey of likely Republican voters, and Trump was about 50 and DeSantis was about 36. And the world went, oh, my God. And donor money started racing into Ron DeSantis because they just thought this guy could be the one. He could replace him. We'll get rid of Trump. It'll be wonderful. And it turned out.
But you called it. You were one of very, very few people who called early on, y'all, this is not even a good empty suit.
Right. And I said it. I said in December of 21, I said, mark my words, Ron DeSantis is an overpriced political stock. And shorting Ron DeSantis was a good call.
Right.
And look, he has one advantage in this campaign, and that was money. Now, that advantage is being pissed away at a rate that it would make drunken sailors embarrassed.
Yes.
But, you know, he is right now running through the campaign money. They fired a whole bunch of their campaign. And as I tweeted the other day, a friend of mine sent me, says, Ron DeSantis is now running a 3/5 campaign. It seems appropriate.
Bravo. Bravo.
Right?
Bravo. Right? Thank you.
I was like, nah.
Thank you. Oh, man, I wish that was an original thought for me because I'd be tweeting the shit out of
that. I gleefully stole it. I can't give her credit because she's actually a public official in the state of Florida. So I can't give her full credit on it, but I started laughing when I saw it because, you know, this is one of those fundamental misreads of being tough with human decency.
Yeah.
I mean, and you and I can joke about it a bit, but this really is somebody who doesn't understand that just owning the libs is not more important than saying that slavery was an unmitigated evil. There were no upsides to slavery. And even if you think, well, that was only one small part of their curriculum, the argument by anybody that you're going to put a bunch of these political people, not academics, not experts on mm-hmm. our history or race relations or slavery or the long arc of this country and our very fraught relationship and problems with that, you put a bunch of Ron DeSantis political hacks in charge of doing this, this is, of course, the outcome you're going to get. So you should just, you know, the idea that I'm so tough, I never back down. It's like the centerpiece of his brand. But that's like saying, hey, I hit my dick with a hammer and it hurts. But you know what I'm going to do instead? I'm going to hit my dick with a hammer more times.
I'm going to hit my dick one more time just to show.
Just to show you libs. I'm going to own you libs one way or the other.
Oh my God, it is so incredibly stupid.
It's painful.
This is the leadership, man. This is the leadership. Then you scale it out. I mean, these candidates reflect the men and women who are running the party. They reflect the men and women who are currently serving in office.
Yep.
And they're just abject stupidity and underappreciating just ignorantly. So that,
yeah, I mean,
they're not going to beat Trump. They don't have in their arsenal what it takes. I mean, I love this quote from Tim Miller, who said that, yeah, I don't know why everybody's so surprised that Donald Trump is leading in the polls, because the base doesn't believe he lost the last election. So, of course, he's their guy. You know, this is all, you know, they think he won the last time. So, of course, they're going to stick with the winner.
They have no ability to understand that this election isn't 2020 all over again. It's 2016. And Trump is going to slowly but surely devour all of these idiots who are in the primary field who think, I'm the one with the secret sauce. I can get past him. None of them can get past him.
They can't.
It ain't going to be Chris Christie. It ain't going to be our old buddy Will Hurd. It ain't going to be Asa Hutchinson.
No.
It's just not happening. You know, if you add up Christie, Asa, and Will Hurd right now, you have basically one-fifth of a DeSantis. How do you make that argument? These people are going to go on the debate stage and somehow have a miraculous moment where they kick Donald Trump's ass on the debate stage and everyone in America goes, oh, wow, I was asleep for 8 years. I changed my mind. It's ludicrous, you know, bordering on criminal.
So the latest polling has Ron DeSantis dropping to 17 points. Everyone else is single digits below 5%. To your point about adding up to one fifth of a DeSantis, Trump is now at 54%. I believe the number is
right.
Why I said this earlier on Andrew Mitchell's show that everybody just needed to get a grip and stop acting like this is news. The news isn't that Ron DeSantis and the rest of the field is flagging or that Donald Trump is leading. The news will be when one of them begins to eclipse Donald Trump. Until then, can we just stop covering this shit the way we're covering it and trying to create, you know, a story where there is no story? This is not news showing me a poll, whether it's a state poll or a national poll, which is bogus crap to begin with, that shows Donald Trump with a double-digit lead at this point. Show me some numbers. And let's have a conversation when Tim Scott is at 40%. Now we can have a conversation.
Anybody want to show me real traction in the race where someone starts accruing numbers and they go up week over week over week
over week,
and they get into shooting distance of Trump, then we're going to have that's a different conversation. But for right now, no one's in that range. No one's in shooting distance. No one's got a clue how to beat this guy.
None.
And
Rick, here's the secret. Here's the little secret. You and I have been sharing that clue for what? 6 years now?
Seven years. I feel like I'm 100 years old, man. And that's the problem with this thing. There's not a moment where these guys wake up and say, oh man, this is, I'm doing Jeb Bush 2.0. Oh man, I'm doing Ted Cruz 2.0. I'm going down the same pathway and getting my ass kicked the same way. And I find it, I don't want to say I find it offensive, but it's just like political malpractice. And all of these people who think that there is a caucus out there, and some of our allies and our friends are out running ads trying to say, oh, well, Trump's a bad candidate. He can't win. You know what? We said all that shit back in 2016.
Yes.
Trump can't beat Hillary Clinton. Oh my God, if you vote for him, you're going to lose. And you know what? They didn't care. And I don't think they care still to this day. I don't think they care.
No.
And you know, what are you going to do when you have a sizable piece of the Republican base who truly, honestly believe that he was elected president?
Do you need a personality to take
It would help. It's not the worst thing. It's not the worst thing to have a personality. I mean, opinions vary, but not by much.
I'm just curious.
Ron DeSantis is like, somebody described him as a school marm, which I was like, that's the perfect phrase. He's sort of like, rah, 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 rah. And you know, having somebody, and you gotta give this to Trump. The guy is a phenomenal entertainer. He understands his role with his base. He understands how to play to his base and make them feel like bound to him. And that entertainment is something that legitimately should put the rest of these guys on notice. But honestly, none of them are particularly good entertainers. Their stage presence on all of them, I'd say Brother Scott, Tim Scott, is probably the closest to having some stage presence. But
I mean, Chris Christie,
Vivek actually is a good speaker.
No, Vivek is very, very good at the word salad. I give him credit on that. It's effective, but the problem is, look, I can't help but have my old county, state, and national chairman hat on when I look at these guys. And you know, this idea that you just show up and decide you're going to run for president and the nomination is yours. Right. When I look at someone like Vivek versus someone like a Will Hurd, I'm like, dude, why are you even pretending that we're going to have this conversation with you? But it says a lot about the base that he is in some polls polling ahead of a Will Hurd or a Chris Christie. Yeah.
In Ohio, you've got Vivek ahead of Ron DeSantis. Where does that put you?
So, yeah, I mean, you know, you've got Vivek beating DeSantis in Ohio. A lot of that is, you know, the sort of branding and putting the money in there and kind of create a false momentum around the idea that Ohioans are actually at the end of the day going to give him the nomination. But it does speak more broadly to how these narratives are playing out for each of these candidates at this stage with the jump off moment coming in August with the debate itself. And Donald Trump has already signaled on his fake Twitter platform, Truth Social, that, you know, I'm not going to be there, so I'll have a chance to look and see who possibly could be a good number two. The trolling that he's doing is phenomenally Trump. It's so Trumpian. But yet and still, you kind of get the feel that that's what some of these guys are trying to do. They're trying to play for that number two spot with him. So they're not willing to go after him in any significant way. They're not willing to risk pissing him off or pissing off that base because you know, if nothing else, they got to stay in the grift game. So they got to keep the money flowing. What do you see outside of Donald Trump? Do any of these individuals stand a chance of making this thing close? Or is it like what I say, stick a fork in it, let's move on and just get ourselves ready for the Biden Trump?
Yeah, look, that's my philosophy here is get ready for the fight that's going to actually exist, not the one in your heads. Because look, and I've said this to a lot of our reporter friends, stop trying to turn chicken shit into chicken salad with this race.
Right.
It's not going to happen. You're not going to get sweeping debate performances where they all gang up on Donald Trump. What you're actually going to see in these debates is they're going to be asked questions like, would you pardon Donald Trump? And everyone's going to go,
I will.
And so the idea that you're going to turn, you know, horse shit into a horse race, chicken shit and chicken salad, however you want to call it, is very prominent with a lot of people in the reporter world, but it's also all based on hoping for some miracle. And it's the miracle of, does he die?
You know, I agree with you in terms of, you know, turning chicken shit into chicken salad and all of that. And because that's what you see happening a lot of times with these candidates. But let's broaden this back out a little bit more, because I think what's important also, and this is something where, again, I appreciate the work that Lincoln Project is doing. You guys put out an ad last week, which I thought was just killer. And it was one of those moments, you know, as I look to pull it up, because I'd like to try to squeeze a little bit in it. Talk to me a little bit about what the thinking of Lincoln Project is right now in looking at, when you sit back, you see, okay, you got, you know, a bunch of candidates that can't get out of each other's way and have no clue how to take on the orange monster. You've got the orange monster who's out there lying perpetually, doesn't really give a damn what litigation or what legal issues come before him. It doesn't matter.
Really don't.
How are you guys constructing this election right now? What are you seeing you need to do to effectively address and put back in the box the beast?
Well, the real thing we're looking at right now is, what does the terrain look like this time next year? We try to play out 6 to 7 months ahead of the curve, and sometimes even longer. And by this time next year, the nomination will be sewn up. It's going to be inevitable. We know who it's going to be. And so what's the campaign he's going to run? Hunter Biden, Hunter Biden's laptop, Biden crime family, come back from, shut down Ukraine. All these things, we're sort of working to predict the structure he's going to build for his campaign, and then build ours to go out and split off those soft Republican voters once again,
right?
Just as we did in 2020 and in 2022, to identify and target in the key states those soft Republicans, because they're out there and there are more than there were last time. And our research has got, you know, reasons for being guardedly optimistic in there. And so we're gonna continue to try to wedge those people out of the MAGA block and block them from moving back by communicating with them for the rest of the cycle. So, you know, we're not really obsessed about Ron DeSantis or Tim Scott or Nikki Haley or anybody else in the primary right now, because we sort of know where the road leads. At any scenario where it's not Trump, then there's been some exogenous event, some major catastrophe for him that nobody can predict right now. But as people who've done this a couple times, we sort of understand the terrain ahead. And frankly, it's also going to be next year partly about helping the Biden folks tell their story. Because you and I both know Democrats cannot sing their own song for $1 million.
They can't even find the song sheet.
Right. But, you know, it's like, turn to Psalm 45, you know, and they... But so we're going to have to help them do some of that next year as well. But yeah, look, we view this as an existential challenge, a real moment. We view there's some X factors out there, like No Labels and Cornel West and a few other things that are going to have to be addressed very carefully. But as we go forward, you know, we see a very good opportunity here to help the president. And it's not because, you know, I'm in love with every single policy, but it's because there's only one party in the country right now that isn't assertively anti small D Democratic.
All right. Well, so we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have a little bit more with my good friend Rick Wilson right after this.
Is it just me, or have we all lost our minds? It's a question more and more people are asking themselves, afraid to admit they already know the answer. It's also a podcast, one about people coming together in a time of division and uncertainty to talk about culture and politics, compromise and connections. It's about challenging the norms we've come to accept as a society and working together to find common ground. Fierce and Unfiltered, host Jennifer Horn is a former Republican strategist and party leader turned independent sanity activist. One way or another, we've all lost our minds. Join Jennifer Horn in the search to find them again.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele podcast. So Rick Wilson is in the house, as we say, and it is always good when he is. So Rick, we were talking about the Democrats and how they really can't seem to get out of their way, how they, like 2020, will need some help. When we get on the other side of this election, let's say that Biden prevails. As I think may very well happen, Republicans lose the House, and they don't gain any ground on the Senate because of the toxic narratives that they're putting out there. Does that become a stabilizing moment or a opportunity to rebalance the democracy narrative, or would we see at that point this hard MAGA environment harden itself even further and just get going full on board, all out, in your face war?
My fear, Michael, is that there is a sort of critical mass of bad incentives for people in the Marjorie Taylor Greene, Matt Gaetz sort of wing of the party now that will keep them coming back for more of this, even if Trump got eaten by a shark tomorrow. I think there's a lot of reasons to believe that unless we really, really wreck them catastrophically at an electoral level, that the MAGA folks are going to keep haunting us for a while. Now, there is a possibility they get wrecked at the electoral level. I would like that. I don't think there's a path back to a center-right party in this country until you basically raise the political cost of being one of these authoritarian, nationalist, populist weirdos. But that's a tough... that's a tough row to hoe. It's a hard assignment. And I think while Trump revealed a lot about where the party is and it corrupted it in a lot of profound ways, there isn't a critical mass on our side to rebuild a center-right party based on, you know, limited government, individual liberty, constitutional fealty. There's not enough warm bodies on our side of this fight to do that until those people get really blown the hell out in some meaningful way in an election. It's got to be seen as poison to be like that.
No, I hear what you're saying, and there are some folks you know, who I've reached out to and have reached out to me, who are kind of toiling around in that vineyard trying to figure out if there's any way to plant some seeds for a center-right party, because I think the idea of forming a third party like we see with Forward, for example, and certainly what we see, which they say, oh, we're not forming a party at No Labels. We're just going to run somebody that's going to muck up the game. That's not it. I think really what it's going to take, to your point, is putting in front of the country an alternative that is realistic for them. In other words, requires the least amount of change in voter behavior, the least amount of change in voter approach to how they vote and look at elections. In other words, this introduction of, oh, now we're you know, we're the center, the centrist party. Well, Americans kind of go, yeah, that's an idea. But at the end of the day, you know, what do you stand for? What do you believe in? So, okay, here are those those articulated principles and ideas. And I think a center-right party can do that. But you're right. You're going to have to be able to do it in a space in which you've put the greatest weed repellent possible.
Right, right. We need political Roundup. Yeah. And it's got to really, and it's got to really, it's got to really cost people politically to be a part of that movement and to say that, you know, the rule of law doesn't matter. The Constitution doesn't matter. We're going to all be in for one guy. And our, and the whole definition of the party isn't about any kind of policy anymore. It's about, you know, are you pissed off? That makes me happy. You know, owning the libs is a really like assertive and seductive plan on their part, but it doesn't really, it's not really a governing model.
It's not. And that, and I think that that is, you know, one of the things that really weakens those inside the party on the policy elected side that are, you know, quietly trying, you know, hoping that Donald Trump, you know, chokes on a chicken bone or, you know, that someone, you know, takes him out. Their reality is you don't win back voters with those events. You win back voters when you articulate a vision for the country in which they see themselves included. So when you tell Black people that you actually benefited from slavery, you're not having the kind of conversation where people are going to line up to want to be a part of what you're doing. And I think that's the part that they don't get. They still look at voters as reactionary enough to the bullshit they're putting out there that they're going to go along because it's better than the bullshit coming from the other side.
Correct. And look, there is a great talent pool on the Republican Party side that has for many, many years been very good at scaring the hell out of people. And I spent a lot of my career scaring the hell out of people.
Yeah. Exactly.
And if we don't understand how strong that incentive is in the minds and the hearts of the people who run Republican campaigns, you know, that's a real problem because they're going to be really trying to jack the fear level up as high as they possibly can in the coming, you know, year and years, to try to tell, you know, middle-class Americans that if you elect Joe Biden a second time, you're going to, you know, lose everything and your kids are going to get a mandatory sex change or whatever cuckoo stuff they're going to do at that moment. And so, you know, I look at this as something that in a way you're going to have Democrats who are committed to telling stories and pushing out narratives that are more compelling and more vivid and more clear than just saying, just go ahead and read our 600-page policy plan on the climate. That doesn't work anymore. And Republicans are emotional and Democrats are, I wouldn't say they're completely logical, but they're more like driven by trying to tell people things in a logical way. But the reality is that emotional attack vector the Republicans are so good at is still going to be there. And as long as there's Fox News, they still have a lot of advantages that are pretty meaningful and pretty dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that you raised the point about leadership a little bit early, and I couldn't help but think about Mitch McConnell and the episode that he experienced during his presser. What was your take on that? And the response by Republicans, I thought, again, you know, irony is never lost on these bastards because they, you know, they sat there and started talking about, oh, well, Mitch is strong as a horse. You know, he's just, you know, we're just, you know, but Joe
Biden. Have you seen senile Joe Biden?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, and here's the thing. I am a pretty sharp edged and pretty, and I can be a pretty, pretty mean son of a bitch. But people might notice that I have a couple things I just don't put into social media. I don't joke about people's kids if they're civilians. If they're not in politics, I don't talk about their kids. It's inappropriate. I've never said a goddamn word about Barron Trump, you know, in however many years. I don't joke about cancer. I mean, I don't joke about debilitating illnesses as a general rule.
Right.
Now, Mitch McConnell is a guy who is a extraordinarily complex figure in our politics right now. And if he goes, I think a lot of the people cheering for Mitch to die right now will not like the outcome.
They will not.
Replaces him.
They will
there,
not.
There are three bad options. You and I both know who all the people I'm talking about. There are three bad options. And if you people want these fuck nuts like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Tom Cotton and Josh Hawley to be running the show, well, you're going to get your wish if you're not very careful. And so, I look, I think McConnell, he's had a couple falls. He's had some medical problems. Like a lot of other members of Congress, he's up there. He's old. Dianne Feinstein should not be sitting in that body either.
No.
And as Scott Galloway said the other day, he goes, you know, we age gate at the bottom to be a member of Congress or the U.S. Senate. You know, you got to be 25. We don't age gate at the top. And there's a point where, you know, the physical debilitation of some of these members, I mean, Chuck Grassley comes to mind, is so obvious and painful that you feel bad that they're still being kept there for whatever reasons they're still being kept there. And in McConnell's case, they will carry him out feet first from the body. He will not retire. He will not resign. He will not leave. But he also may not make it.
Yeah.
And look, I try not to be such a dick about people when they're sick. And I don't know what happened in the end of the day. I've seen friends that age have TIAs and things like that. I'm not a doctor. I don't know what happened, but I will say, if you're in the Republican leadership and you stand there watching the guy just absolutely in locked up for 90 seconds, I'm like, come on, people.
Yeah.
Stop calculating and go be human beings. Go help the guy.
No, I agree with that 100%.
I mean, when I saw Barrasso just standing there, I'm like, come on, take a step, go over there, take his arm. Come on.
That's right.
Fall.
That's right.
And I would have said that about anybody, but it is, you know, there's a sort of gleeful cruelty about it right now, but that shit comes to everybody.
It does.
None of us get out of that.
It does not pay attention to your party label or, you know, where you go to church. Everybody has that moment. So I want to end as we began, because as I mentioned before, you guys at Lincoln Project put out a wicked ad last week on Trump on a DeSantis slave trade school. Let's take a quick listen to what I think right now. It won the week for me, I think, if not the season so far.
We're proud of what we've done to be number one in education freedom.
Ron DeSantis knows the importance of a good education.
But with this new bill I've signed, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Now Floridians are able to enroll at Ron DeSantis' Slave Trade School. Find out how easy it is to learn from home, just not your home, for a career in exciting fields such as...
Being a blacksmith.
Slaves did develop skills while they were enslaved and then used those skills as blacksmiths. As in agriculture, carpentry, tailoring, painting, domestic service, transportation, in the shipping business.
They listed everything out, and if you have any questions about it, just ask the Department of Education.
Or get your degree. You can major in rewritten history or generational trauma. Call now.
You should talk to them about it. I mean, I didn't do it, and I wasn't involved in it.
Pure gold. So my retweet of that, I said, DeSantis Slave Trade School testimonials, quote, I never thought about being a blacksmith until I came here. Quote, the field work was incredibly beneficial. Quote, I couldn't believe I got to pick from so many electives. Coming to a school system near you, you ain't seen nothing yet. Dude.
You know, that was a, That's a couple of new producers who've just joined the team, and they were really having some fun with it last week.
Give them an extra cup of coffee.
I will do it, because they are they really knocked that one out of the park. And I that's one of those moments where we have to use some humor, because it's just so goddamn awful otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so dark, awful, and awful otherwise. And look, that's going to end up, if Ron DeSantis loses this race, which he's going to lose this race, that's his legacy. That's going to be in the goddamn encyclopedia next to his name. When he dies 50 years from now, people are going to write in his obituary, DeSantis, who said that slavery had some good points. I mean, you know,
but the best part of this clip, folks, and I please go to at Project Lincoln on Twitter to watch it if you haven't seen it, is with the segment with Waters, who from Fox News, who's sitting there on the five talking about all the benefits in agriculture and this, but the cutaways to the rest of the people around the table looking at him like, dude, how fucking stupid are you?
Right. Even Fox guests are like, the fuck is this?
It was classic. You guys captured the moment and boxed it so well. Rick Wilson, one of the best, good friend, man. I appreciate you. Appreciate being in the fight with you so much. And
absolutely, brother.
And
I'm going to send out an invitation for you to come on my podcast soon.
Yes.
And then we'll continue the conversation and some other shenanigans as well.
You got that right. Folks, follow Rick on Twitter at the Rick Wilson. Certainly, again, check out the good work at Lincoln Project at Project Lincoln on Twitter. And certainly, Rick, you guys have got some other projects that you've got up on social media. Tell folks what they are, where else they can find you, not just on Twitter.
Well, I'm also my podcast, The Enemies List, is over at Resolute Square. And you can, it's at Resolute Square. And so you'll see my columns there. We've got a newsletter that goes out every week, with columns from me, Stu Stevens, Reed Galen, Joe Trippi, some others, some very, very smart writers who are in the pro-democracy space. But my podcast is there, and it comes out a couple episodes a week. We also do the breakdown on Lincoln Project TV. That's on every other Thursday right now. It'll be every Thursday once we get past the summer. What else do I have going on? I'm also on Threads at The Rick Wilson, where you will mostly see pictures of my cats, girlfriend,
I know, you do.
and the pool.
you do, folks. Right now on Threads, I'm on Threads too as well, @chairman_Steele. And it's hysterical because, Rick, a lot of cat photos, but that's all good.
A lot of cat photos.
We're warming up Threads for them, because that will become the new space to go to. Trust me, folks.
Oh, it will be. It will be. All right, my friend.
Is a shithole right now, and it's getting worse. But Rick, thank you so much, my friend. Thank you, everybody, for being a part of the podcast family. We really appreciate you. Don't forget to do the download thing. It makes me feel real good when you do.
Subscribe.
Yes, subscribe. We love it. And until next time, be safe, be well. God bless, and stay out of the heat, because it's hot as hell out there.
I'm in Florida, man. It's the surface of the sun outside.
All right,
see you, Michael.
Thanks, Rick.
Facepalm America is a show for progressives and others on the left who want to keep up with the ridiculousness that this country dishes out, find out what cable news misses when they're waiting for Trump to appear at a podium, and also, every once in a while, get a laugh at how silly this hot mess of a nation of ours really is. If that's you, listen to Facepalm America. You can go to facepalmamerica.com or find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.